The Guardian. Social enterprise for me is about involving the community. It's about actually bringing power to the community in running their own business and enabling them to actually make that happen in their community.
I think it's about being innovative. It's looking for new solutions, perhaps, to some old problems.
It means to me sustainability of important, crucial services, innovation.
For the benefit of the community, you're putting back something back into the community. You're not just driven by making profits for shareholders.
Hello and welcome to a rather special edition of the Charity Effectiveness Podcast, brought to you by Society Guardian and knowhownonprofit.org. This month we're coming to you from the Guardian's Social Enterprise 2010 conference. I'm Jane Dudman, editor of Public, The Guardian's website for senior public managers, and over the next 25 minutes or so, we'll be shining a spotlight on social enterprise, the role it's playing in the UK today, and the opportunities and challenges it brings. I'm joined, as ever, by a panel of esteemed guests. Alison Ogden-Newton, the Chief Executive of Social Enterprise London, the leading organisation supporting social enterprises in the capital. Rodney Schwartz, the CEO of Clearly So, a website bringing together social enterprises and investors. And Gordon De Silva, the founder and CEO of Training for Life, a charity that provides work and apprenticeships for unemployed people through social enterprise businesses. Hello to you all.
Hello.
Hello.
At the start of the programme, we heard some definitions of social enterprise. It's still something that tends to divide people. So what does social enterprise mean to you all? Alison, what does social enterprise mean to you?
For me, it's business that doesn't leave anyone behind. It's business that's profitable and it has social impact. And if you have the time, we'll tell you more about what that means. But for the most part, you know it when you see it. It's business that inspires and sorts out the problems of the community, but uses a business model to deliver that solution.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, slightly different view. So charity is about doing good, and social enterprise for me is about using kind of the business model to do good. One step beyond that is the social business, where you're a business, but also you have an equivalently important objective of doing good. So it's kind of a spectrum of being more and more market-oriented.
Thanks. And Gordon?
Very difficult to define social enterprise, as most people have found over the last 10 years. But crudely, it is a means through which you could measure the social impact as well as the financial impact of your business model. If you could genuinely achieve both, then it is not unreasonable to assume that you are a social enterprise with social entrepreneurial ambitions that are successful.
Thank you very much for those definitions. And with those definitions in mind, I've been asking people at today's conference what motivated them to set up a social enterprise in the first place.
My name is Avril Schramm, and I'm the managing director of a social enterprise, a community mutual, which is called Millmead Children's Centre Partnership Limited, and we're from Margate in Kent. The enterprise was chosen in the form of a community mutual, which was primarily to enable the local community to actually take part in a business which actually took the whole community forward with them, give them the power to make those decisions.
My name is Nick Cristoforo and I'm managing director from NEO, the Positive Change Agency. We're a communications agency based in Brighton, working with charities, social enterprise and the public sector. On a personal level, it was about getting some kind of reward, personal reward, out of what we were doing. I mean, so many people, I gather, are shifting across to social enterprise because they're just not feeling satisfied with the work they're doing. And, you know, there's a lot of small businesses that are popping up that perhaps may have been people that have gone into charity, but they're seeing there's another way to do things. You can actually be a business and actually make a difference at the same time.
My name's Steve Bomford. I'm from Portsmouth. I run a small social enterprise called Neb Media. If I'm absolutely honest with you, it was a bit of an accident. We came up with an idea a few years ago about putting a magazine together, and we wanted to try and run that. It was a purely commercial vehicle. Credit crunch happened, couldn't get any advertising, and then it was suggested, because some of the sort of values and beliefs that we had of the magazine perhaps could be a social enterprise, we got eventually referred to Unlimited, and they actually funded the project for, well, it was a minor level one award, I believe they called them, so that's how we became accidental social entrepreneurs.
So, Alison, what would you say to people who are considering turning their organisations into social enterprises? What are the kind of things they need to think about?
Well, it depends. I mean, picking up the point that Rod made about spectrum, it depends where on the spectrum they are. If they're a charity, they need to look at how business-driven they are, where the profit's going to be made and how they can establish a business model that's sustainable. If they're coming from the business end, they're going to need some investment, and they're probably going to need an intermediary to access the part of the market where their social impact is going to be felt. So it's a question of where they come from, which defines what their needs will be.
And we are seeing at the moment bigger and successful social enterprises taking on more public services. How do you see this market changing, and what are the opportunities for the sector? Gordon?
The opportunities are going to be driven by two primary variables. One is to what extent you could build the critical mass of social entrepreneurs so that there is a real talent base there to exploit the opportunity. And the second is the investment models that are available. Now, it's all very well talking about third sector organizations or social enterprises managing public sector contracts, but if there is not the financial structure within a business to be able to absorb, for example, payments by results, which may be over a very long period, then the challenge and the opportunity for a great deal of social enterprises who would have small cash flows or limited cash flows to manage would be quite challenging. So I think the government, and listening to Nick Hurd's speech today, it was encouraging because there's clearly an understanding that this is an issue.
We see an opportunity here. If we can grow this market called social investment, we will make it easier for social entrepreneurs to access the capital that they need. And quite simply, we want to help prove the proposition that you can invest for good, that you can invest to make a social impact, make a contribution to tackling a social problem, and have the chance of getting some of your money back, all of your money back, or earning a positive financial return.
And as you say, Gordon, Nick Hurd, the Minister for Civil Society, was addressing our Guardian Social Enterprise Conference this morning and did make some very good points about the need for the sector itself to step up, as it were, to the table and to be ready and to take advantage of those opportunities. What do you think of the challenges for them, Rodney, in actually doing that?
Well, like everything, we're now in the talking phase about what they're going to do. And there's now the phase that is even more critical, which is what are they going to actually do? I have to say, so far, I've been really impressed with the way Nick Hurd has actually dealt with things and the way he's laid out his case. I think he wants to work very much with the sector, which is slightly different from the predecessor government, which was fond of creating structures. So I think that's all to the positive. He's likely to do things that are much less distortive to the market, I think, because of his background and because of his experience, and that's, I think, all to the good as well. But I think he has significant challenges. He wants to leverage in a lot of private capital, and the way to do that is to do it in a very careful, steady, dependable, kind of planned way, rather than chopping and changing on a regular basis.
And as well as the challenges of investment, there's also, of course, the challenge of cuts. We live in a time of cuts. What are the difficulties or perhaps indeed the potential of local government cuts? Is that a problem or a potential? Alison?
It's both, in short. We've produced a document called Transitions, which is produced for particularly local authorities to distribute to their staff to ask them whether or not they're interested in setting up a standalone providers. Talking to local authorities in particular, and I've been doing practically nothing but over the last couple of months, it is both. In the first instance, they are looking for strategies for outsourcing. They're all looking at outsourcing. They're looking for exit strategies for existing staff. So they're encouraging their staff to set up as standalone providers. And the question is, will those be social enterprises or will those be straightforward businesses? Is it privatisation, in short? And we would offer and counter that we have a better alternative to that. The other part of the spectrum is, will outsourcing find contracts for existing social enterprises and people functioning in the voluntary sector? And my thesis on that is it's going to be extremely limited because the cuts mean So the size of contracts are going to be very small if they continue to exist. And the majority of the opportunities, or at least the strategy facing most local authorities today, is how do I meet what is up for some local authorities? They're talking about 33% reduction front-loaded. How am I going to do that and at the same time maintain any kind of social sector support? And it is slipping so fast down the agenda, you can hear the fingernails against the blackboard.
You can hear the fingernails, Rodney?
Yeah, well, I think this is an unfortunate circumstance for this government because of the timing. So I think they would have implemented a big society program anyway, but I think cynics will largely see this as a fig leaf for cuts. And I think we're seeing the beginning of the cuts, and I think the cuts will get much worse, and I think they will be much worse than people expect that they will be, and their impact will be much worse than people expect. And I think that that will unfortunately reflect on the program itself. I think as we go forward, it's going to be really critical to be able to analyze what is the result of the Big Society program, which has within it the germ of some very good ideas about civic engagement and community ownership and all that, on the one hand, and on the other hand, a program of budget rebalancing, which has just been proven to be necessary. We can argue about the extent, but I think going forward, responsible observers are going to have to be clear about distinguishing between what is one thing and what is the other thing.
And as we move forward, what do you think? How do you think public perception of social enterprises is likely to change? Do the public know what a social enterprise is, and will that change, Gordon?
I think if you bring 10 consultants who work in the social enterprise industry around a room, around the table, and the chances are that they will all have very different understandings and definitions of social enterprise. So widening that out into the general public, I think there's a general sense of it's a good thing, isn't it? It's a good thing. But can I just throw a spanner in the works to a certain extent? There is a bit, and I've been saying this for a while, there's a bit of is social enterprise yesterday's great big idea. And in many ways, I'm beginning to feel more and more that it may just be. Let me explain why. I think post this period of global realignment, financial realignment, there are people out there thinking differently about their lives. They're saying, what am I doing? What am I doing differently? How do I manage myself? How do I manage what I contribute? These people are not going to be social entrepreneurs and they're not going to create social enterprises, but they are talking about an ethical way of doing business where they bring together the need to enhance social capital alongside financial capital. And I think what's exciting for me for Big Society is not so much that it is a policy-driven concept. It is a virus. It is the potential of a virus, a germ, that has the potential of eroding society and really being quite all pervasive. I think if the government get this right, it is more the idea than the policy.
Thanks, Gordon. I think Rodney wants to come
Yeah. In. I mean, social enterprise is today's buzzword, and it's really, really hot. And I guess 11 years ago, it would have been third way, and that was really, really hot. And I think, you know, it will come and it will go in terms of as a buzzword. I think there are underlying the buzzword some real elements of social enterprise which make it really valuable and a really important systemic solution. And I could summarize that in one word, which is that the economy, which proved to be unsustainable, was about one thing, which is profit. And the economy of which social enterprise is a part is a more balanced economy, where people on the one hand seek sustainability or profit, but on the other hand seek some sort of ethical or environmental or social objective.
Thanks, Rodney. One thing I must just now mention is the New Guardian Social Enterprise Network, a new online space where professionals working in or with social enterprise can talk to one another, get advice and insight from peers and industry experts, and grapple with the challenges that face the whole sector. So that's one and truly plugged there. Do check it out, well worth a visit, at guardian.co.uk/social-enterprise-network.
Well, earlier on, I caught up with Di Powell, the chief executive of one of the UK's most successful social enterprises, the HCT Group, a thriving business with 490 staff and a turnover topping £20 million. HCT provides training and jobs for hundreds of long-term unemployed people and runs transport services in the capital and in Yorkshire. I started by asking him for the secrets of his success.
We've stuck to the mission. We've stuck to what we wanted to do. We've grown the business year on year by actually having very strong committed staff, very strong management board, as any business should. I think the key one is actually having everyone knowing what your mission is, sticking to it, be passionate about it, and just keep developing.
You mentioned staff there. Is it very different managing staff inside a social enterprise?
No, it's in some ways I think it's a lot easier. I think you're managing people who are very committed. The balance always is between the commercial and the social good. And all staff have to understand that balance, that it isn't just one side. You have to be a successful enterprise before you can be a successful social enterprise.
Of course, we live in hard times now. What is going to be the impact of local government cuts on organisations like your own?
The cuts are going to have an effect. Things are not going to be delivered the same way in 5 years down the line as they are now. Anyone who thinks they are is mad. We see it as a huge opportunity. Local authority has to change the way it delivers. It cannot do exactly the same just for less. It has to do it differently.
And where do you think those opportunities lie? Where are you looking to? Which parts of the sector? Where do you think those will come?
We work in the transport sector, and what we're looking at is how you can rearrange transport much more local, much more for local people, that integrates all the transport modes, be it education transport, mainstream transport, special education needs transport, social service, all into one mode, because it's the same people use the transport all the time.
And how can government help the sector?
The biggest thing the government can do is champion the sector. It is a legitimate business model. It is trying to change the way business is done. It's trying to actually put sort of the social objectives at the heart of business. And the biggest thing we can get from this government is to actually champion the business model.
And moving on from that, is there a need for a better public perception of what social enterprise is all about? And if so, how can you go about changing that perception?
I think this sector has to become aware of what the public perception is. And the public perception, I feel, is very wide at the moment. The sector's been very strong at getting itself noticed. Now we have to differentiate ourselves. We have to differentiate ourselves from private company and from public sector. And that, I think, is the key of the next few years.
And how are you going to go about that yourself?
Well, obviously, as chair of the social enterprise mark company, I think there needs to be an identifier that identifies the values of the organisations that are out there that call themselves social enterprises. And it's the values of, you know, are you asset locked? Do you trade? Are you charity? Where, you know, what do you actually stand for? And making those actually at the heart of the organisation, not at the edge of the organisation.
Thank you very much. Alison, HCT is often held up as one of the pin-ups of the social enterprise world. What can Social Enterprise London do to help others reach the heights that HCT has already scaled?
You're right, it is. And you know, we're often accused of constantly talking about the same handful of social enterprises that have achieved scale. My organisation's here to help establish new social enterprises. We've got 2,200 members, but we're also there to try and help people grow in size and scale. It's all about money. It's all about market. It's about, you know, what you're selling, who's buying it, and how you're going to finance the way in which you're going to meet that demand. And it's all about your ambition. I mean, some people are very happy in a niche market. They're very happy to be small and fabulous and innovative, and they shouldn't be criticised for that. But if they're working in the public sector, I think that's going to get increasingly difficult to find access to market, because government has shown some very strong tendencies to go for scale. But there is nothing wrong in being small. However, it would be exciting for the sector, and I think it would ultimately be more rewarding if we could scale up the social impact by scaling up the social enterprises. So it's about helping people access finance, making connections with people like Rod. It's about helping people with their business planning. It's about creating new markets. So we work with politicians, local authorities, outgoing PCTs to talk about how they can convert their current service delivery into social enterprise models, encouraging them to do so, to provide the opportunity for social entrepreneurs to step into that space. There's a lot going on.
And Rodney, what do you think are the barriers to social enterprises scaling up in that way?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, HCT, I really can't comment because actually we've been an advisor to HCT. I suppose we operate in a different place from the market than Allison and Social Enterprise London. And in this case, actually, it's good to work in partnership. So Clearly So has about 1,800 businesses on the site, and they probably represent the more ambitious, those who more seek to scale and seek to gain access to the things that we provide them access to. So, I mean, and I think it's all about the four basic building blocks of what makes an enterprise successful. You need to have cash, so that's obviously critical, and we tend to get it for them from high net worth individuals and retail investors. We don't really believe in the government model or in a lot of the charitable foundations funding this. But it's also about the three other things, which I think are too often neglected, much harder to do, and people don't want to admit to being weak at. And they are building a great team, which you need, and that's critical, selling your product, which most people forget they need to do, and finally, counting the beans, so financial management and control. I think if you don't do all those four things for the more ambitious social enterprises, they definitely won't succeed, they definitely won't scale. But what we're keen to do is work with organizations like Social Enterprise London and others to actually take those organizations that do want to scale and help them.
Thanks very much. And Gordon, Rodney talked there about building a great team and selling a product. How have you gone about that in your own organisation?
Yes, I suppose unlike Alison and Rodney, we've been very much immersed in a delivery model. It's been, Alison said the word, you know, it is about investment. And Training for Life over 15 years now has built up a business model with no working capital, no cash reserves, built up around a £5 million turnover and a £10 million capital asset base. Now, if as a business model it could be adequately resourced, we can scale and scale very quickly. What Rodney was saying was absolutely right. At the end of the day, what we have as an industry is something quite unique because you have the opportunity to harness people's passion and people's commitment in a way in which a 9-to-5 job doesn't. So the fundamental resource that I certainly have as a charity that runs social enterprises are its people. You look after its people, you're halfway there. You get your funding right, you can get all the way there. And with a government like this, with that genuinely seems to understand growth and building brand, it is an exciting space for me to be in.
Thank you very much. And before we go, I'm giving the last word to Steve Bumford, who runs a small social enterprise called Neb Media, and this is his take on the benefits of the social enterprise model.
I think in some ways people are actually prepared to talk to you. I think I was thinking about this on the train on the way up, actually, and I think there's an element of, certainly with bigger businesses, is I don't know whether the trust is still there. Perhaps it has been, you know, obviously with the banks, companies like BP, perhaps not doing as well as they perhaps should have done, could have done. Who knows? But I think there is an element of that. There's not enough days in the week to run a social enterprise at the moment. Obviously, it's very contemporary. There's an awful lot going on, and I think from my experience with like both having one foot in both camps of like the third sector and kind of more traditional business, because we do also trade commercially as well as do projects, is that I think everybody, it's like the beginning of a boxing match and people are just sizing each other out and no one's too sure which way it's going to go. Not that it's a fight, but you know what I mean? It's a kind of like trying to assess each other and think, why are you at this table kind of thing?
More like flirting.
Flirting. Oh, that's one way of putting it, flirting. Look, I prefer flirting, to be quite honest.
I'd like to thank Alison Ogden-Newton, Rodney Schwartz, Gordon De Silva and Di Powell for their contributions to the programme, and thanks also to my producers at Sound Delivery. I'm Jane Dudman, the editor of Public, The Guardian's website for senior public managers, and you've been listening to the Charity Effectiveness Podcast, brought to you by Society Guardian and knowhownonprofit.org. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.